Man, this is so, and this little bitty pine tree right here, this looks like someone planted it, but no, just Mother Nature. Wow. You know, this is almost a spiritual, mystic feeling up here. Man.
Yeah, a lot of these places have that.
It just, oh, I love it.
I also can't help but think that that's one of the reasons they chose these spots.
Yeah. Well, I feel mystical or spiritual, Mark, up here, right?
You know, I think that a lot of times they would actually choose a place that they felt maybe some kind of an energy or something. I don't know. I've been to places like Stonehenge and, you know, and places like that, and they all kind of have the same kind of a funny vibe to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I was out in Sedona, Arizona once where people tell me there that's like the Native Americans feel like that's the vortex of their spiritual energy or something. And I'm getting that right here in Saline County.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the theories, and it was a guy from Carbondale that actually came up with that theory, Young, can't think of his first, Jim Young. Well, anyway, he wrote a book called Weird Egypt, and one of his theories were that because of the Hicks Dome situation, that there's kind of a vortex action that's because of this tectonic plate stuff. You know, that's one of the many, many theories that we have here.
Right. Well, it is true. Isn't Hicks Dome basically an extinct volcano?
That's exactly what it is. And like I said, that's why there's so much floor spar down there in that area. And one of the larger of the stone walls, which is basically almost gone now, the farmers have hauled it all away over the years, is in Johnson County, and it's called the Trigstone Fort. And it is just a little bit above the creek area where the Max Creek Vortex is supposed to be located. So, you know, you got that wonder about it, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot more than meets the eye.
Well, these stone walls, in my opinion, are kind of like an onion. There's so many different layers to it that, and you just keep peeling back and finding more.
Do you think you'll ever wake up one morning and say, I'm done writing books, I'm done, I can't learn anything more about these stone walls? Do you think that day will ever happen?
I hope not.
Based upon the times I've spent with you, I would be willing to bet my house.
Yeah, you probably. You know, and that's the sad thing about guys like me. When we try to write a book, we don't ever know when to stop. And we keep looking for more and more and more. And to be quite honest with you, the hunt is what's so fun about it.
Exactly. Fascinating.
Now, one of the reasons that the wall was basically gone unnoticed for so long is because of where it's at.
Yeah.
It's kind of in an odd spot. And when you see it, you'll understand that most people just probably look past it. And most people that come up here to the bluff, they stay around where all these rocks are. They might go to the end down here, but they don't venture right down here.
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
And this is where the wall is right down here. And as you can see, this is the one area that was probably originally the way people came up here.
Right.
Because there's just a slope here, and this little spot right here is an area that you can just walk straight down to the creek.
Right. And of course, it's still a pretty good, I'd say, 30 degree slope.
Yeah. And it, as you can see, the scatter of the rock wall that has tumbled down the hill over the last several hundred years.
Right.
It makes it even more difficult to walk down the hill.
Wow.
But I actually find it easier to walk down the hill this way than it is the other way.
So we'll go, when we return to the cars, we'll go this
way. Exactly.
I don't want to press my luck. We've already had one close call. Wow. Okay.
Now that we're standing right here, a lot of the leaves, this is not a real good time to see it, but
yeah.
The leaves are, we'll get down here where you can see it a little bit better, but the wall would have run right through here, and you can see it better down here.
Okay.
But I believe that the entryway was right here. And when we came up that middle way, we saw where a wall was probably located. And I believe they probably came in right through here. And as I said, most of them have kind of like a little causeway or entryway into the area. And I believe this was probably it right here.
This looks like almost like a cozy little guarded nook. On one side, you have this massive rock bluff, and on the right side, a smaller rock bluff. Okay, so almost like a sacred passage if you were in church coming into a secret door to get onto the sanctuary.
Exactly. And I was talking to Jan Simic, who's a archaeologist, used to be the president of the head of the archaeology department at University of Tennessee. And he says that a lot of times these entryways like this were kind of a way to, like you were entering into another world or into another dimension. And it was kind of a spiritual thing to enter in between these things.
So symbolically and physically, it was a way to kind of get your mind in the proper mindset that you needed to be.
Exactly. And like I said, almost all of these places, with one exception, and that's the one at Stone Fort Bluff, have these kind of entryways. A lot of people don't realize this. Technically, if you've ever been at Pound's Hollow, everybody parks up on top of the hill and parks there. But the way the natives would have come in would have been from the creek below. And technically, the passageway is actually what was known as Fat Man Squeeze.
I didn't realize that.
And that is definitely a little entryway.
So again, it shows you about the big picture of these stone walls. It wasn't the fact that you would get here to basically thank the spirits, but getting here, you had to do it in a certain way, a certain ritual, to really pay homage to the spirits, because they is how you survived.
Yes, and another theory is that the spirits were angry with them and they came here to get away from them. That's another theory a guy's got.
Yeah.
Well, and then there's also, of course, what's known as the refugee hypothesis, and that's the idea that when the Mississippian people came in, they drove the woodland people into the hills and they came up here and built fortresses to get away from them. You know, there's just all kinds of interesting theories here.
Right. Now, the Mississippian people were the people that lived here, let's see, between 1000 and 2000 AD?
Yes, and they're the ones that we typically call the mound builders, the people that most of them were in the agriculture. They were corn growers, the maize people that lived in the river bottoms, and the people of Cahokia and Kincaid and those type of areas.
Okay. And then the woodland was the years before that, maybe. Yes.
And the woodland is actually divided into three parts.
Okay.
Early, middle, and late. And it's basically divided because of pottery.
Okay, the pottery. So the woodland people lived here between, let's say, 0 AD and 1000 AD?
Well, the early woodlands goes back even into the BC time period.
Okay, yep. Now I got it.
One of the interesting things, too, is some of the early writers called these the archaic stone forts. And so originally, a lot of the things that were written about them considered them 2,000 and 3,000 years BC, and because that's when it was known as the archaic period. But later on, they got to looking at the writings, and all they meant by archaic was old.
Okay, they didn't really mean by archaic 3,000 BC, just old generally.
Yes.
Okay.
And here's what's left of some of the stone wall, and you can see it better from down here.
Yeah, I can already see. Yeah, these looks like smaller pieces of rock that So these are the pieces that 1,000 years ago human beings hauled up from the creek, maybe. Wow.
And down at the bottom of this hill is a small creek, and I would say a lot of the rocks came from there, but I would say it would probably clean the creek out of rocks pretty good until more erosion and it showed more. So they were probably brought up all up and down here. And this wall is about 150 feet long. And it stretches from one end of the area where you can walk up and then the cliff starts, all the way over to another area where the cliff starts. So it's like between the area that you could walk up the hill, that's where the wall's at.
Gotcha. Okay, of course, right now it's not much of a wall because time and the great earthquake. I'd say the mound is maybe 5 feet above the surrounding hillside, but there is definitely, you could see quite a few jumbled rocks that are right here.
And especially down the hill. I mean, if this is one of the better places, War Bluff is another place where you can really see the scatter down the hill. But when the leaves haven't fallen, quite honestly, other than the time when all the mayapples pop up, this is probably one of the worst times to actually see it. But you can really see how the rocks have just fallen and tumbled down the hill. You've also got to realize when you look at these that in 1,000 years, that's a lot of falls. The water running down the hill, the leaves falling, you could probably dig down, and archaeologists have done this, where you can dig down next to it and find out that there's 2 or 3 feet probably of a wall below the surface.
Because of natural weathering.
Yes, yes, exactly. Okay. Right. There's a place called Hog Bluff where you really can't see the wall at all, but the archaeologists have pinpointed where it's at and have actually dug down, and they can find about 2 feet of the wall under the ground. To where it was, and a lot of other times are kind of in a little place where there's a slant because it's where you walk up, and just the natural erosion and stuff running down the hill, and then all of a sudden it pushes up against the wall and it just slowly fills up along the inside of the wall.
I can see that. I just thought about this. This might be a good place for maybe Dr. Butler or somebody to bring that new high-tech ground-penetrating radar that they've used. What do you think they would find?
Who knows? Yeah. But
it'd be awful rocky to get it up here.
One of the plans is, and of course, you know, we're dealing with the federal government, and so, you know, the financial restraints and all, but one of the ideas is to eventually do some archaeological survey up
good,
here.
Good, good.
And I'm looking forward to that when we do that, and it'll be interesting to see what we find. But one of the things that is very interesting about what they find is very little, which actually speaks a lot in itself. What they do find sometimes, if they do find anything, it's actually over the sides of the cliff. It makes you ask the question, did the erosion just wash it all off? Did they keep the place swept clean? There's usually no mortuary site associated inside of them. There's very little camp activity, and if there is camp activity, it's later on, many years after the wall was built.
Right. That's a very good point. Continuing with the church and sanctuary analogy, when you go to church on Sunday, you don't want your church to be dirty and unkempt.
That's exactly right. And later on, different groups of people probably came in here, and as we said, up on top of this place is, you can see a little place where kids have had campfires. People come here and camp. It's an easy place to get to. And early settlers, the Indians that came 1,000 years after the late woodland people would have seen it as such an area as well. And because it was an area that stuck out to the late woodlands, it would have stuck out to early settlers and everybody else. And so there's some activity. Giant City State Park was a well-known picnic spot on Sunday where the Stone Fort Bluff was at. You know, it was the Stone Fort was a well-known site for picnics.
Fascinating. Yeah, interesting you said, so there's a good chance they wouldn't find anything. I was going to ask you, Mark, you know, if we were to dig around, we may find some pottery, but probably the answer, since this is a sanctuary ceremonial site, probably not find pottery.
Now, with that said, actually, the last time we were up here with one of the archaeologists, she did find a piece of pottery.
Just shows you why you never want to stop learning.
Exactly. And she reached down and said, well, I'll be a piece of late woodland pottery.
And it was just on top of
it. It was just laying up on top of it. And just a very, very small little fragment.
But probably a piece of pottery 1,000 years ago it was made.
And, you know, and who knows, was it, if it was a fort, they would have had to have water. We have a hard time with it being Fort Simple because it would have had to have been like kind of like a last stand Masada type place, you
suicidal
know.
Suicidal place.
Yeah, because there's no water. Was there some type of, did they stay up here for days to do the ritual and they needed containers for water and food? I mean, who knows? Yeah. But you do find a little teeny bit, but you don't find what you would think you would find. I think the place that they have found the most is the one at Giant City. And I think a lot of that is stuff that just actually came later than the wall.
Okay, gotcha. So we are looking at stone wall number 11 that you discovered. Yeah, and I can see on this mound a collection of maybe, I don't know, 5 feet by 5 feet rocks, some a little bit smaller, but you can tell that these are smaller than the big monster cliff face that's above us.
And it's obvious that they came from somewhere else down the hill.
Sure.
Because you just don't see that the rocks like that up here.
Right, exactly.
Now, if we walk down here, we can kind of see the outline.
Okay, so this stone wall, you say, roughly runs about 100 feet along this ridge?
Yes. Okay. And you can basically, from about right here, you can see where it runs along here.
Now I'm getting my big glasses on now.
And it literally runs right along there, and right where the cliff drops off is where you can tell that it ends. And what, like I said, with the leaves, it's a little harder to tell.
Yeah.
But you come up here in February or whatever, after all the leaves are blown off and beat down, you can really see the line of rocks that goes right through here.
This is just fascinating. And just standing here with you on this quiet day, I do get kind of a neat feeling knowing that this was and probably still is a very sacred place. Okay, so I can see like this rock here. It's not super big. I can maybe carry that maybe 20 feet. And another question, do you think there are still many more of these stone walls in southern Illinois left to find?
That's a very good possibility. The fact that the only thing that makes me wonder if maybe there's not is because you have to remember that this area was actually populated more so in the 20s and 30s than it is today. And there were little farms scattered everywhere, and everybody pretty much knew where everything was at. A lot of these areas didn't even have trees. That's probably one of the ways that Mr. Trigg found out about this was from some local person, and they just mentioned it. And that's how he found out. However, this one did go unnoticed, but it didn't go unnoticed by Trigg. I have found other leads in his paperwork and have followed them up, and they would become maybe a stone wall built by an early settler, or for one instance was some stone mounds that were Indian graves. We found that up on Tower Rock. So it's a good possibility, but at the same time, it's also a possible, it's about a 50-50 thing.
Right. Yeah. Oh, and that reminds me of the, we're pretty sure that these weren't used for mortuary or graves, because research has been done in the soil underneath, and I assume scientists have never found any skeletons or skulls or bones around these stone walls.
No, and the earth is actually, where most of the stone walls are, the earth is actually pretty thin, so it'd be kind of hard to go very deep. Probably the most interesting thing is that there's really no signs of habitation, maybe a short period of habitation in some of these places, but a lot of those, once again, were later on.
Right.
The only place where we actually find a mortuary site inside of the stone wall is at Millstone Bluff. But once again, those stone, they're called stone box graves, would probably have been put there between 500 and 1,000 years after the stone wall.
Okay. Yep. Which is still within the Mississippian time, but newer than where we're standing.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
The Mississippian time period was when they believed that the people inhabited Millstone Bluff. But the wall dates back way before that. As a matter of fact, a lot of the wall that is there was probably dismantled by the Mississippians for other purposes.
Okay. So again, were these walls then built by the woodland inhabitants?
That's the belief, yes. Okay. That depends on who you ask. If you ask an archaeologist, they will tell you yes. If you ask someone who is a follower of the Mormon Church, they'll tell you no. If you ask somebody that goes by the theory of Cleopatra coming over here, Cleopatra's niece coming over here, I mean, there's all different kinds.
Yeah. Or like that story you told me, there's one myth or wives' tale, the Roman Empire extending over here.
Yes. Okay. As a matter of fact, the Roman Empire was supposedly Cleopatra's, like, granddaughter or something was one of them. But there's also the legend of Prince Madoc, a Welshman who came over here, and that these are like the Welsh hill forts. I mean, there are just so many different theories, and some of them are pretty wild.
Make for good entertaining, good campfire stories, but probably not the science to back it up.
Yeah, there's very little science to back a lot of that up.
Yeah, I can see now we're about 20 feet from this part of the stone wall, and I can see a lot of the rocks are kind of jumbled, but they're still there. 50 years from now, I wonder if these rocks, for example, will be in the same place.
That's a very good question. I think that probably a lot of the erosion of this has probably kind of halted, and I think a big bunch of it happened during the New Madrid earthquake. I mean, there was for a two-month period there where just everything shook. And, I mean, church bells were ringing in Philadelphia. And so you could imagine what dry stacked rocks would have done on a hillside.
Oh, sure.
Not to mention the fact that there was no Menards, there was no Home Depot when the settlers came in here. And rather than go down to the bottom of the hill, down in the creek in the valley and try to get out, there's a big pile of rocks up on this hill. Let's go get them and build wells and chimneys and things like that.
Fascinating. Okay. Where to now? Eventually, there's... Okay. Looks like we're out of the area of the stone wall.
The stone wall, most of the scatter is right over in here.
Okay.
You can see a lot of scatter when you get up here. Of course, the leaves are kind of masking most of it. But we picked the probably the time when there's more leaf coverage than there'll ever be for the rest of the year. But you can see it, the scatter goes way down the hill.
Okay. Yeah, I remember an earlier interview, I think you said one of the favorite times is February, dead of winter, no mosquitoes and stuff, and a lot of these leaves are gone.
Yeah. You can see the scatter right along in here, and then it continues on down. Now, when you're walking along here in February when the leaves are down, it's pretty tough to walk because there's just so many rocks.
Yeah.
And then there's a creek bed, a little creek right down the bottom of the hill.
Oh, okay, there you are.
This is... Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is my first time here.
The program you're listening to was pre-recorded. You're listening to a guided hike at Murray Bluff with Carrier Mills history teacher Mark Motzinger. This program was recorded on November 18th, 2016.
You know, because of that trail is there, that seems like the natural way to come in. But before the trail or anything was here, this would have been the natural way to come.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And the little entryway that I was showing you would just be, you would just walk straight up here and then walk between those rocks to the inside of the enclosure.
Right.
Wow. You know, the one at, there's one at Draper's Bluff, and it has a very pronounced entryway. The one at Thomastone Fort near Cobden has a very pronounced entranceway. Of course, there's no more pronounced entranceway than the one at Pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the fat man squeeze plus the rocks that you walk through coming from up the creek. There's just sheer bluffs and sheer rocks and probably about 6 feet wide. And it's really an interesting.
Fascinating. Well, the walking is getting a little easier.
Now you can actually see, you know, that there's these rocks just all up and down, and this is kind of an unusual way the rocks are laid out.
Yeah. We're back now. We're down on the flat land. The low part area at the base of these bluffs. So again, we are on Forest Service land in Saline County. What's that natural area again?
It is a Reed Chapel ecological area.
Okay.
And it is a kind of a specified area that I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure Dr. Schwegman is the one that got that started. But there's some neat ecological aspects to it. As a historian and not a biologist, I'm not sure exactly what they are, but I know that there's something there.
You're right, yeah. This is really interesting. And again, the good thing about this is on the Shawnee National Forest, which means this land belongs to you and me and all of us taxpayers. So this is preserving our heritage in Southern Illinois. I think that's great. Don't you agree?
I agree. And, you know, that means it's public property mm-hmm. for us to come and look at, but it also means it's public property for us to help protect. As you can see, on the way here, we stopped and looked at a Civil War grave.
Yeah.
I do that every once in a while. I'll get to looking at one thing, find something else. Found the grave of a Revolutionary War soldier down at the bottom of the hill of Millstone Bluff, and I spent some time with that. So,
tell me, a Revolutionary, not Civil War, but the American Revolutionary is in 1776?
Yes, he came here in the early 1800s and settled in the Pope County area. And died in, I think it was in the 1820s, and a group of ladies and some men from Pope County, Martha Schwegman.
John's wife.
Yes, John's wife, put a new marker up down there at the bottom of the hill. And I didn't realize that, and they did it on a Friday. On a Saturday, I went down looking for the old grave, and I could see something glowing way down in the distance. It was in February. It looked like... I walked up to it, and it was a brand new marble tombstone, and had fresh dirt around it. They had put the new one in the day before, and I didn't know it. And when I saw that, I immediately got on to find out who had done it. And a group of people from Pope County, who would do a very good job at helping keep the history alive down there, actually came in and put a new marker. A tree had fallen over and broken the old one.
Okay.
And they put a new one in. So it's an actual Revolutionary War soldier that's buried there in, his last name is Ralston, buried there in Pope County.
So an American born in this, do we know, was he born in this country?
He was born in the Carolinas.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And he, do we know where he fought the British, Boston or Concord, or do we know?
He was actually in the Carolinas. He actually fought at the Battle of Guilford Courthouse.
Where was that?
That was in North Carolina.
I'll be darned. So again, what after he fought for our independence, what made him move here again?
Well, this is a See, this is what happens to me.
Yeah, I hear another book coming up, Mark. Why don't you start another book?
What happened is, and I don't know if how many people are familiar with a guy named Moyers, who wrote a lot of history here in Southern Illinois, and he wrote a little book back in the early 1900s called The Old Soldiers Reservation. And basically what happened was, at the end of the war, Congress didn't have a lot of money. At the end of the Revolutionary War, Congress didn't have a lot of money. So what they did was, they knew they had this land that George Rogers Clark had come in and liberated. And so in the early 1800s, they sent these surveyors in and petitioned off stuff. And that's why we have the 1807 drawing of the old stone fort. But when they came into this area, they decided to use some of this land as payment for Revolutionary service. And so some of these guys began to come down the Ohio River. And they would, you know, they would get out at Golconda or Shawneetown or Cave and Rock, and then they would move into this area. And a lot of that migration didn't really grow until the Indian threat was over in the War of 1812, and then this area began to fill up in the 1830s. And so a lot of those people came here with grants for military participation.
Fascinating. So again, this Revolutionary War hero born in the Carolinas, Ralston, probably got a grant and said, I want to see what this area, you know, close to the Mississippi River is like. So he, as far as we know, he probably did not have any family already here. Just the grant enabled him to move west.
And, you know, and he's not the only one. There's a little cemetery in Sling County called the Cottage Grove Cemetery. And there's a William Roark buried there. He's a Revolutionary War soldier. We have another one buried. We can't quite figure out where the grave is, but we know it's somewhere here in Sling County. That's a guy by the name of John Rector. We don't know for sure exactly what happened to him, but he was supposed to be a Revolutionary War soldier. So we have several different people in Sling County that were Revolutionary War soldiers that came here. You know, they may have been 18, 19 at the end of the war, and they had grants. My own family, Joshua Motzinger, the first one that settled in this area, came here with a land grant for his service in the 1818 Seminole Wars.
Fascinating. And I think that's so fascinating, too, because there are written records. For example, how do we know that they served in the Revolutionary War? Did you, like, see a death certificate from some old courthouse? Or I'm not saying I don't believe you, but I think it's fascinating how you discovered this.
Well, what happens is when they would come into this area, they may live here for 20 years before they actually got legal.
Right.
So, you know, just because they, let's say that they got their land grant was done in 1840, doesn't mean they hadn't been here since 1820. A lot of times that happened. And what they would do is they would go to Shawneetown, which was the land place, and they would file their petition. And a lot of that paperwork is, you can still get. I actually have a copy of the land grant that my forefather, when he first came to Southern Illinois in 1835, and it says for service in the Seminole Wars.
Fascinating. And so Shawneetown at one time, probably back then too, Shawneetown was probably a bigger town than maybe what it is now, you think?
Oh, without a doubt. At one time, it was the metropolis of the area, and it was where all the business was done. The banks were there, the land offices were there. And a lot of people get a little confused as to why were people who were maybe traveling up to where Kaskaskia is at in Cahokia, why would they get on a ferry at Shawneetown? Why would they get on a ferry at Cave and Rock? Why didn't they just follow the Mississippi and then, or the Ohio, get to Cave Rowan and go up to Mississippi? Well, in a flatboat going up to Mississippi was not an easy task. The quickest way to cross Southern Illinois was to get off at Cave and Rock or Elizabethtown or Shawneetown and then cut straight across.
Horseback
or whatever. And that's what they would do. And so that's why the land office was put there. It was also kind of a place to kind of keep an eye on the Salines, where the Saline wells were at. And so Shawneetown kind of was a unique place because it was a town that was actually platted and put there by the federal government.
As a place for, like you said, a place to process land grants to repay the Revolutionary War veterans.
Right. And it's called Shawneetown because at one short time, there was a group of Shawnee Indians that lived right in that vicinity. And the story is that when they left, they told the people, that the settlers that were moving into this area, you won't want to stay here. This place floods too much. And so they left. It took them almost 100 years, but eventually they decided this place floods too much, so they moved the town back about 3 miles.
Okay, good deal. All right. Thanks again for talking. And do you ever get bored not wanting to learn anything at all?
Probably not.
That was Carrier Mills history teacher Mark Motzinger with a program recorded back on November 18th of 2016 on a hike in the Shawnee Forest in Saline County near the Pope County line. From all of us at WSIU, we hope you enjoyed this program. This is WSIU Carbondale, WUSI Olney, and WVSI Mount Vernon.